Coming up next hour, Robert Chapman, the owner and editor of the International Forecaster, but we've been looking forward to her all night. Always nice to have on Catherine Austin Fitz, who has served as the managing director and member of the board of directors for a Wall Street investment bank, worked in the government, outside the government, and always on Coast to Coast. Good evening, Catherine.
Hi, Ian. What a year.
The one we just had or the one we're about to have?
Both of them.
So I'm curious. It's always interesting to talk to people and see trends in conversation. And So we've already kind of caught some of the trends that people are seeing between Gerald Celente and Joe Meyer. How are you seeing 2010? And do you see a month or a time when we might be pushing from a bear market back into a bull market, either in Wall Street or in any other sector?
Well, I think we're going to see maybe you could call a bull market in both precious metals and the emerging markets, but I think we're going through a very fundamental shift in the economy, and we're going from a place where the U.S. stocks and U.S. economy is deeply subsidized. That subsidy is going to be withdrawn. So if anything, if you want to look at the U.S. environment, it's going to be in a bear market. But there's an old expression, there's a bull market someplace. And I think what we're seeing is the center of gravity in the global economy shift out of the United States into the emerging markets. And that's really long in the coming, because it was really our pulling of the capital out of the United States in the 90s and shifting it there that bet big on that happening. So, this shift is something that's being engineered from the United States and has been underway for quite a while.
Okay. On Wall Street, do they say that there's a bull market someplace, much in the same way they would say somewhere it's happy hour?
No, I do think it's a bull market. I think there's a future. I always think there's a great future, and the question is, where is it and why is it there? What we're looking at is we're part of a population that has an aging population, and the excitement is shifting to the markets where there's a young population.
Interesting. Although, doesn't the aging population give us a big market for employment in this country? I mean, in order to care for all of these aging people and all of this aging infrastructure, shouldn't that immediately be a sort of a built-in job market?
Well, sure, but historically, what makes more money, new technology and innovation or nursing homes?
Right. No doubt about it. Well, actually, in some cases, nursing homes, but depending on how nice the care is, I think. But, okay, fair point. So looking ahead at 2010, where do you think the bull markets will be? If they're not here, where are they going to be?
Well, the whole planet is going through sort of a shock to make this adjustment. We moved massive amounts of capital out of the North America in the 90s and shifted it into the emerging markets. But that's always a sort of quirky, uncomfortable process. And to make that possible, we bubbled not just the North American economy, but we sort of bubbled the global economy. Things got a little bit out of hand and ridiculous. And then in 2008, we literally went through a process that's like throwing your car into reverse when it's going 70 miles an hour. And so last year we kind of spun around, and we still have a lot of digesting and settling in to do. So one way I think of this coming year is that, the gears have got to grind through a fair amount. As the bubble works its way off, one of the things we've done is another really historic shift we're going through is going from a world where places are governed by sovereign governments to a world where places are governed by corporations. And in the process, we've used debt to really get control, sort of eviscerate governments and get control of populations. And we're really looking at a global control system that works through debt. And of course, the $64,000 question that everybody's trying to grapple with is, you know, what's the end game on that debt? Because we've now created, you know, I think I told you the story before of being in a investment conference in London a couple years ago, and the money manager got up and said, we better hope they're aliens because we've now borrowed, the U.S. has borrowed 80% of the world's capital, and the only way we can get any more is to go off planet. And literally, we saw the Chinese say the same thing this year. I mean, the U.S. borrowed $2 trillion through the Treasury, and there's more to be borrowed next year. Where are we going to get it? And if anything, that underscores the a reconciliation that traditionally has been reconciled by war rather than, you know, new ways of finding. I mean, the ultimate way you find capital is by with a gun. So
yeah, we were talking about that earlier with Joe about how, you know, that was when Spain was going through this, just to use one example. You know, they decided they needed to pay off their debts. They went out and conquered new lands, exploited new resources. But we can't really do that anymore. I mean, it's not like
You know, my guess is that a lot of where the black budget has been going is big bets in space. And in fact, you know, if we could peel behind the veil and really look behind the veil, that's what, in fact, is going on, and that's what some of those investments are all about.
Do you mean in space, meaning what, growing things in space or mining the moon?
No, literally space exploration, space stations. I think we're what we've seen. If you look at the money that's been pulled out of North America and the global economy, you know, including through the black budget over the last two decades, my bet is one of the biggest uses of that money, in addition to invisible weaponry, is big investments in space and space mining.
But how does that capitalize into a return? I mean, where will the money come out of? What are we going to mine? What is it that's going to come back to us in terms of a financial return?
Well, that's the challenge. It won't come back to us. It'll come back to the corporations that stake out that space. So, you know, it's our old sort of, it's the old model. The government pays
right,
and the corporations benefit. And your guess is as good as mine about, you know, what the possible technologies and minerals that come out of that might be.
You know, I didn't mind that when it was Pop-Tarts and Tang.
Uh-huh.
The space sticks, you know, that's fine. But, I mean, if we're really talking about black, you know, these sort of black budgets, that's a ton of money. There better be a return than more than just to a private corporation. It better come back to the American people somehow.
No, I don't think that's the plan. Right now, I think the big return to the American people has been from satellite technology and invisible weaponry. So, if you look, the economic value of the dollar is many, many multiples of what its real economic. I mean, the financial value of the dollar is way above any fundamental economics. And if anything, that reflects our military prowess. And it's very much a result in the last decade or two of the satellite system and our ability to literally, implement surveillance and support intelligence for precision warfare on the ground. So, we have the ability to force people to buy treasuries in dollars. And, of course, our appetite has gotten so huge. The question is, how much more subsidy can we draw from the global markets?
Does this speak back to the conversation we were just having with Joe Meyer about the price of gold and the price of silver? And where do you see those going in 2010?
I see them going higher. I think we're in a long-term bull market for precious metals, both because the extraordinary inflationary policies, monetary policies, which are just going to continue as part of managing the debt. I also think there's been a long-term movement to privatize the gold and silver stores out of the central banks, although that appears to be reversing now. And we've literally see a variety of parties behind the veil collect up monopolies of gold and silver. And now it's been to their advantage to suppress the prices while they were essentially using fiat, running the fiat currencies out, but now it's going to be more to their advantage to let it rise. So to me, we're in a long-term bull market. The last thing, Ian, that's happening is we're really watching a fundamental erosion of trust in the sovereign government system and in the big fiat currencies. And as that happens, more and more people are moving into precious metals. We have a couple of big funds, both Paulson and Sprott up in Canada, coming out with big Paulson's doing a gold fund, Sprott's doing another sort of ETF that's going to be traded on the New York Stock Exchange, a real competitor to the iShares or the GLD. And as that happens, you know, those are big accumulations in the first quarter. So if you look at all the people who are lining up to increase their positions in precious metals, from the central banks to the institutional investors to retail, not just in North America again, but this is a global phenomenon. I just think it argues for a continued long-term bull market in gold and silver.
Earlier we were talking about the housing market, but specifically the commercial real estate market, and that may be the most vulnerable, the one that may be the next to pop, that there's way too many, there's way too much square footage out there for rent already, for lease already. Where are you with the commercial real estate market, and how will that affect the rest of us, do you think?
I think the worst year for commercial real estate is going to be 2011, not 2010. We still have a lot more residential pain to take with the rolling over of the option arms. And so I think there's another real bad year of pain on that, and then the commercial pain will really get hit hard in 2011. Because remember, the commercial's got to digest the impact of growing unemployment, and it's going to take a while for that to cycle through. So as bad as commercial could be in 2010, I think it's going to be worse in 2011.
And more bank failures?
More bank failures. We've had about 140 in 2009, and I think there's more to work through. Unfortunately, it ought to be the big banks failing, not the little banks, but the feds have engineered the policy. So if anything, it's the reverse. We're taking out more of the healthy than the unhealthy.
I saw a headline, but I didn't read much of the story, about how Wells Fargo was going to be restructuring its bonuses, sort of with an ear to the ground, and or maybe with a boot to the face. But whatever it is, they've determined that they're not going to do the bonus structures the way they used to.
Well,
interesting trend, is, I hope.
Here's the most creative thing that's going to happen in 2010. The most creative thing is going to be billions of dollars spent on academics and lobbyists to basically explain why the banking industry believes in capitalism.
Right.
Because what we've seen is we've watched the federal government and the central banks pour incredible money in to save them, when in fact what we needed was for them to fail. And then we've watched the Fed and Treasury help engineer insider profits, basically to buoy their income statements, and they've paid back the money they've borrowed basically with rigged profits. I mean, if we had played that rigged profits game on Main Street, everybody in America would be richer.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. Imagine, Ian, if last year I gave or we engineered a loan of $1 million to everyone in America and then arranged for them to get on their Schwab and Scottrade and E-Trade accounts and turn that into basically $2 million, then pay back the $1 million, and then go home rich. Literally, if you look at the numbers, we could have done that.
It not too late for you to run for president.
Well, I'm afraid
that could be your platform. I think everybody would
do it for the banks, and I don't think we should do it for Main Street either. So I probably would lose.
You had your shot at a third party for just a minute. You had your shot. So we were talking before about with Gerald Celente, and I thought it was interesting, uh-huh, about healthcare reform. And because I just kind of threw out the idea that somehow, as it was proposed, that healthcare reform might actually be an incentive for the economy. I was surprised to see that with the last two guests, that there's been at least a fair amount of agreement on that idea that somehow if we could lower our health care costs, that our economy would expand. Where are you?
Well, but health care reform isn't going to lower our costs. What it's going to do is it's going to – we've created a framework to cut Medicaid benefits. Mm-hmm. If you look at the U.S. debt clock this year, essentially the U.S. debt, not including the bailouts, was about $38,000 per person. But then Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security was about $130,000 plus per person. And so the challenge has been how do you create a framework that can start to really cut and reduce that liability? And that's only at the federal level. If you look at the impact of Medicaid on the state government budgets, that's going to be enormous. So Medicaid has been a way to, one, lower the Medicaid liabilities, to basically tax the productive part of the population, not in a way that's going to lower expenses. If anything, it's going to raise expenses, but it's going to shift healthcare expenditures. The money that the average person has been spending on healthcare, when this kicks in and they're going to be spending it on healthcare insurance and foregoing the healthcare. And then finally, it's created a framework for what is arguably the most invasive compromise of personal freedoms, that we've ever seen. And I think the combination of those things is going to be devastating for the economy. Now, what it's going to be great for is, it'll basically force revenues and resources out of the hands of the population into sort of the medical cartel, including the insurance companies and pharmaceuticals. But all the things we could do to truly reform healthcare are not envisioned or included in this package.
Well, we'll follow the pattern we have had for the last couple of hours. We'll give the numbers out here coming up. What about some good news on the horizon in 2010?
Oh, I think there's a lot of good news on the horizon in 2010. 2008 and 2009 was the period when people realized a change is coming, and now they're ready to shift. It's really shifting out of an old paradigm into a new, and so there's a lot of breaking away. We've watched the newspapers really fail, but that's because so much more news is coming through the blogosphere and through radio talk. In fact, I would predict, I don't know what your numbers are for 2009, but I would predict Coast to Coast is going to be up a lot in 2010. And we're going to see people who've been telling the truth do really well, and that whole area of sort of grassroots media grow and people who are telling the truth. So one good place. And another good thing you're going to see is more and more families start to organize and communities organize, and rather than wait for big government bailouts or sort of help coming from the top, there's going to be a lot more really grassroots organizing, and in a way that's going to make you're going to see more and more people emerge who have been taking action, predicting that all these things are going to happen, and they're the ones who are going to be having good years and getting followed. There, if you look at all the markets that are growing in, there are people who've been working for years on real solutions. And we're finally going to start to see money flow into the solutions guys, and out of the sort of big corporations. And there's dramatic things that can happen. We just saw Arianna Huffington come out. I've been saying for years, I did an audio seminar in 2005 called Where Would Jesus Bank, and trying to get people to shift their money out of the big banks. And now we see Arianna Huffington coming out and doing a little video calling for everybody to leave the big banks. If the money starts to shift, there are so many businesses, so many community banks, so many groups working on real solutions if we'll just start to back them. And I think 2008 and 2009 were years when it finally got through to people it's time to really shift, and we're starting to see that shift.
You were one of the first, I think, to use that paradigm, what would Jesus do, as you were making the claim about banking and about personal finances. Since then, I saw something like a month ago, how would Jesus snack? And I thought, okay. Really? Do you know exactly how Jesus would snack? I just thought, you got to be kidding me. All right, let's get to questions from Eddie on the international line. We start in Canada for Catherine Austin Fitz on Coast to Coast. Eddie?
Hi, everyone. Ian, I think you're right. The Amero, it's never going to happen. We'll never give up our currency.
The Canadians, why would they want to? I just think it's great. It's a fantasy that people are having. Unless, of course, we could somehow make you. But I've never successfully heard of anybody making a Canadian do anything. So
yeah, it's not going to happen. It's also a question of sovereignty.
Right.
We like things the way that we are. It is right now. We love Americans and we love our own country, too.
Right. I understand that.
Yeah. Question for Catherine. Catherine, right now it seems like the tail is wagging the dog with respect to this relationship between Wall Street and Washington. And I think people are kind of put off by the way the fabulous bonuses have returned so quickly. And I'm just wondering, how much longer do you think that can happen? Because up here, no one's ever heard of bankers. And as you know, our system has held up quite well, and we've barely had a hiccup through the meltdown. I'll just hang on and listen to your answer. Thank
you. Catherine,
well, it's true the Canadian system at this point is in much better condition than the U.S. system. And I think part of it is, my guess is if we've watched about a decade of incredible financial fraud engineered by Wall Street and Washington, and one of the questions is behind the scenes, what is that really financing? And I think part of that is the black budget story. How long can Wall Street do it? They can do it as long as the military supports them doing it. And they've gotten away with it so far. They're getting away with it this year. And, as long as the U.S. Budget depends on the financing of huge deficits and Washington depends on Wall Street to finance those deficits, it's going to continue to put them in the catbird seat. And so I don't see Wall Street losing its arrogance for quite some time.
Mike is in Spokane on Coast to Coast for Catherine Austin Fitz. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, thank you, Ian, and great guest tonight. I enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I was just wondering when this question for Catherine is, I was just wondering when corporate Washington is going to be revealed in their their CAFRs, their annual financial reports. I mean, when is this information is actually going to be revealed as to where they get the maximum amount of their revenue versus how much of the revenue they get from the taxpayers?
Great question. The CAFRs, the Consolidated Annual Financial Reports, will show that there's a lot more money sort of being siphoned off or a lot more money stockpiled than most people imagine. One of the things that consolidated reports do is they provide very detailed information on state and local government, and we're coming into a year when the state and local governments are going to be facing tremendous deficits. The part of the political dynamics in the United States is the federal government can print money, but with the exception of one state that has a state bank, we have no states that can literally print money. And that puts the state and local governments at an incredible disadvantage. We've seen the growth of a 10th Amendment movement where the states are starting to get pretty frustrated with what the feds are sort of engineering onto them. And I foresee one of my sort of hopes for this year is that we'll get enough people digging into the numbers now that there is a real resource issue, digging into the numbers and saying, okay, where is all this money? Where has it gone? And how can we start shifting where it is and how it's used so that it really benefits the people and things in ways that make economic sense? Our challenge is right now, for the last 50 years, because America breaks down into 3,100 counties, the average county in America has become much, much more dependent on federal government financial flows. And so if we're going to shift that, they're going to have to dig in, find the money, and really come to blows with the federal government over the money. That's where the fight's going to be. And so my hope this year is everybody gets deeply interested in looking at the consolidated financial reports for your state and for your county. My other hope is all the out of work software developers will start to dig in and start to illuminate, if you will, the financial ecosystems, because the way to create jobs is to find that waste. I've never dug into the county numbers where we weren't paying significant amounts of money to corporations and defense contractors, you know, $100, $150 per hour to do something that an unemployed taxpayer in that community couldn't do for significantly less and wouldn't enjoy having that job. So
yeah.
There's tremendous jobs and employment to be found by trolling through the consolidated annual financial reports. And it's a great question.
Where would you recommend? I mean, if you could say, you know, everybody move to such and such, is there a place? Is there a region of the country? Is there anything in your research that's popped up that says this is an area that would sustain growth, that you would be able to hold off against any of these major upheavals coming up?
Well, if you look at all the different criteria that makes a great place, a place great for one person as opposed to another, one of the important things is that we're with family and communities where we're known and we have relationships. I think if you look at the generic things that makes a state attractive, you want to look at both, sort of ability to succeed with climate change. It has good water. And the finances and government. If you can go to a state that has significantly, you know, more balanced budgets and less state and local government debt, the better you off you are. I just have to put in a plug for my state of Tennessee because I moved here in 1999, and one of the things that attracted me here was how modest the lifestyle is, how much everyone in Tennessee really sort of takes care of the land. It's beautiful, beautiful farmland, great water, and very high quality of state and local government. Just incredible people. And in terms of balanced budgets, we're struggling like everybody else, but doing much better than many. There are many, many states that, that have not been profligate over the last 20 years. And so they're there, but everybody's different. And you really, what I always tell people is the question is not what place am I safe? It's what place do I want to contribute to making safe? What place do I want to build?
I lived in Nashville for a long time.
Did you like it?
I loved it. I love Tennessee. In fact, yeah. To this day, I still sport a Go Vols tattoo on my butt.
You see, I live in a cotton farming community. I have cousins mm-hmm. who are cotton farmers.
Right.
And for me, living with them and living in this community, it's a Christian community. Mm-hmm. I'm a Christian. And living in we have a little mural, town mural, that's across the town commons. I live on the commons where Casey Jones used to drive his train through.
Oh, sure. I know it well. I know that you're down around Jackson then, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And if you look at our town mural, they have a quote from Corinthians at the bottom. It says, whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. And for me, living in a place where people really think they're supposed to try and do that is it's very, very special.
Have you ever seen the Casey Jones Museum?
Oh, sure, in Jackson, absolutely.
Okay.
My father grew up in Jackson.
You know where that caboose is that's high on top of the pole at the Casey Jones Museum?
I don't remember that.
Well, they put one up there that's high up there on the – there's uh-huh. a giant – there's a caboose that's up there. Well, my cousin, Huntoon, was there. He was a town father, and he was there the day they raised it, and they served tea up there or coffee and toast or whatever. And he had breakfast there.
You know, everybody still talks about Casey Jones because he had a deal with the town mothers. He would stop the train at the end of the town and walk it through Hickory Valley so as not to endanger the kids or the animals.
Right, right.
And we got to get back to that.
I agree. Austin is hanging on for Catherine Austin
okay.
Fitz in Harrisburg, Virginia. Go ahead, Austin.
Good morning. Well, I'm going to clarify a few things for everybody. There's a working behind the curtains that nobody really knows about. There's congressmen, senators, and a whole bunch of people. There's going to be an emergence of, or rather a rebirth of America. And the title has been passed along through congressmen and senators at the Constitutional Republic of America. And it's really been networked on the internet and at the clarification for a lot of people.
Now, Austin, you gotta hurry this around a little bit. Let me just ask you, do you have a question for our guest? Okay.
Well, it'll help clear up what I'm getting at.
What do you see
in regards to the American people basically taking back our country? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Very good. Go ahead.
The single most important thing we need to take back our country is to make sure that the right people are hold the sheriff's office in our counties. If you look at the structure of our government, the single most important person in the country is the sheriff. There is no way federal jurisdiction can come in and usurp a sheriff if he's got the support of the local people. And I would really encourage everybody in this next election, instead of wasting money and time on the federal elections, it is really important to know who is your local sheriff and make sure you've got the right sheriff, and then to stress upon your local and your state candidates that they support the 10th Amendment movement. So, I would say it's time to get really, really interested in the quality of the local candidates you elect to office and how you support them.
Alicia is in Sacramento on Coast to Coast, first time caller line for Catherine Austin Fitz. Alicia?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. What does this economic collapse mean for the common folks that have massive amounts of credit card debt, student loans, mortgages, and which they can't pay? Will this debt be forgiven, and will credit scores mean the same as they have in the past? And I will take
my answer
off the air.
Thank you. That's a really interesting question.
Well, it depends. Economic collapse, if it looks like it's it did in Russia, means nobody's going to be worrying about credit scores or debt. You know, nobody's going to be able to collect them. You're really going to have a fundamental breakdown. That's one kind of economic collapse. The likely, if we go the economic collapse scenario, the likely one is the dollar drops dramatically in value, at which point the debt that you have, if you're able to continue to generate income, may get easier to pay off. If not, you know, we're all gonna really find ourselves in debt servitude.
All right. Is Phil Bredesen still governor of the state of Tennessee?
Yes, sir.
You know where he's from originally?
It's from the software industry, but I don't know where he grew up.
Rochester, New York, which is where Ron is. Hey, Ron?
Yes.
Catherine Austin Fitz, we have just a minute for you. Go ahead.
Okay, great to talk to you, Catherine. I think what the prior caller may have been referring to was some of the subject matter that Christopher Story talks about on his website. I hope you're familiar with him, but can you address the legitimacy of the NACERA movement, the National Economic Security and Recovery Act, and whether that'll actually happen and people will actually get paid out on that?
You know, I can't. If you look at their proposed legislation, it has a lot of good ideas. How serious it is, whether it will happen, I can't say.
Very good. Thank you so much, Ron, in Rochester, New York, and also then down in Tennessee, Catherine Austin Fitz. Just as a P.S., Phil Bredesen, your governor, once issued me a badge. I still have it. I'm still an honorary police officer in the state of Tennessee. So all the more reason to pay more attention to who's your local sheriff. So thank you so much for your time. As always,
thanks,
it's a pleasure.
Have a great evening.
Great question, and Happy New Year to you.